Welcome to Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plants dialogue hosted by the Sophie Health Team with founder Kaveh Mamari, herbalist Pamela Spence, and evangelist Vincent Boone. Together, we explore the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age, and hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.health, reconnecting people and plants.
Well, a very warm welcome to the show this week, and it's the last in our current series. Thanks for tuning in to join our conversations about managing stress and the common issues of poor sleep and anxiety the Sophie way. We have loved bringing you guest speakers who've inspired us, people from the world of medicine, plants and beyond, to examine different approaches to health and well-being. And our hope is that by having these conversations between people who would normally never meet, we have showcased new approaches and opened up new ideas of healthcare, some that are pillars of the Sophie.health system and can support us all in new and profound ways.
Now, if you have missed any of our series, please have a look at our Listen on Demand page on the UK Health Radio website. You still have time to catch up. If you're not clear about the Sophie.health mission yet, please tune into episode one. There we kind of like explain who we are and what we do. And from there, you can see the list of distinguished guests who we've had the pleasure of interviewing each week on topics from wild food to keyhole surgery and from managing your energy to compassion in medicine. At Sophie, we have a very special vision for health, and we have created a combination of plant extracts, an application, and an online community to support people through stressful times.
Last week in episode 20, we welcomed Sophie founder Kaveh back to the show to update us on what he's been up to. And we talked about the series and what we've learned from each of our expert areas. Vincent as an online community architect, Pamela as our own medical herbalist, and myself as the voice of the Sophie Pioneers. They are other people, you know, who, like myself, have struggled with anxiety and the issues it causes. It was great to think back over the series and realise the depth of interviews we've had and the guests we've been lucky to speak to, as well as sharing our favourite moments so far.
But we're not done yet, though. Before we introduce you to this week's guest speaker, regular listeners will know that we've created a page specially for UK Health Radio listeners who would like to try Sophie out. And we have a special discount code for you, which is Radio50, and gives you 50% discount off the price of a Sophie pod. You can find out all of this information at join.sophie.health/radio, or just go to the UK Health Radio homepage, click on our banner, and it'll get you directly there. And now a little bit about today's guest speaker, Professor Monique Simmons, OBE, Deputy Director of Science at the Royal Botanic Gardens Kew. For those of you who are not in the UK, we know about half our listeners are in the US, you may not be aware that OBE stands for Officer of the Most Excellent Order of the British Empire and is the second highest ranking order of the British Empire level awarded by the monarch for having made a major contribution in their field.
Monique is responsible for coordinating projects with different business sectors that promote and utilise plant and fungal-based solutions to meet current global challenges. She also has management responsibility at Kew for the teams that deliver the Millennium Seed Bank Partnership, interdisciplinary research, higher education and the Global Centre on Biodiversity for Climate. Monique has over 30 years' experience of research into different aspects of plant and fungal chemistry, with an emphasis on the traditional and economic uses of plants and fungi, including quality control of medicinal plants. She has a long-term interest in investigating the impact of plants on well-being.
Monique's research, funded by both the academic grants and commercial organizations, aims to increase the diversity of plants entering the trade and supporting human well-being through illustrating the economical importance of plants and fungal diversity. Monique has co-authored patents for compounds in the areas of malaria, cancer, pest control, cosmetics, and has been involved in getting food, medicinal, and cosmetic products to market. What an amazing career, devoted all to plants, Monique. Evie, I'd love your thoughts on meeting Monique today.
Hi, Monique. It's such an honour to get to hear you speak on today's show. And I mean, what a bang to go out with for our final show of the season. As we heard there, your bio really speaks for itself. It's so inspiring to think about how you've devoted all of your time and effort into such a crucial subject that is often disregarded in modern society to kind of help bring attention to the highly important plants of our world. In today's show, I'm especially interested to find out what it really was that introduced you and inspired you to work within the world of plants. And I'm hoping it may even give me some inspiration as to the endless possibilities of my future, possibly working with similar plants. You know, I was properly introduced to kind of the power of plants through Sophie, and it's something now that I have learned it that I will always carry with me, whether it is my main profession or not. I will forever be able to see the beauty and power in the ecosystems around me. And I'm hoping our pioneers and listeners here today can, if they haven't already, also be inspired by your words to learn to appreciate the power of our ecosystems.
Monique, so lovely to have you here. Thank you
Thank
for
you.
joining us on the program today. We know that your time is super precious, so thanks for actually taking the time to be with us today.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me.
It's awesome. It's awesome. And yeah, obviously it's been amazing to have worked with Q as well, with Sophie and the involvement you've had in that. I was kind of wondering though that, before we kind of like delve into, detail and that kind of stuff, if you're thinking about your background, what inspired you about the world of plants? Is there something specific that has driven your career to the amazing heights that it has, eventually achieved?
Well, when I was younger, I really had no love of plants, I must admit. I got involved in plants kind of through insect-plant interactions. And then it was very much on why is there a folklore about the uses of plants that doesn't really link with a modern society at times? I just really wanted to provide more evidence about those uses of plants, especially plants from, say, non-UK, because I spent a lot of my youth in different parts of the world where there is that very, very strong link about the traditional uses of plants for treating animals as well as humans.
When we've spoken before, Monique, it's really interesting to hear about your travels. And when we spoke before the show, you talked about the fact that we don't always know what's in the plants. And but you talked a bit about there, you knowing that there was something there. You know, can you talk a bit about that?
Well, I would put it's kind of the evidence against associated with folklore. So, you know, what is in a plant that is associated, let's say, with a medicinal use? And therefore, when is that plant used? Which part of the plant is used? Where does it come from? Really, really important features of a plant. And that's when they take that traditional kind of knowledge, put it into a laboratory setting, because they're very much evidence-based. And then we study the chemistry of the plant, the ingredients in that plant that possibly can explain that medicinal use. So it's a little bit of detective work that goes on. To be able to do that, there's two kind of key elements. One is you have a knowledge about chemistry. The next is you have a knowledge, or you're working with people who have a knowledge about say diseases, because the two bits need to come together to really be able to provide the evidence. And through that coming together of different disciplines, we have increased our understanding about often the value of that plant. And yes, if it's good quality, it contains the active ingredients, then it can have a very strong medicinal property.
Well, when we were talking about it, you know, someone like myself who's coming from, I'm almost bridging the two things in a way. So I know the folklore as a herbalist. I'm also using these plants in patients and seeing change. And we also study phytochemistry as part of our degree. That's a big part of what we do. But it's quite frustrating because often there's no evidence there because the studies haven't been done. And I come across a lot of people who will just knock that back and say, well, there's no evidence. What really warmed my heart talking to you was that what one of the things that you said in our conversation was, you don't always know what's in them, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't work, which is kind of one of the things I spend my life saying. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, yes, there's different things that lie behind that. So, at Kew, we've got we're very lucky to have this rich collection of plants around us, and so we can read something in the literature or folklore, or say a plant being used to treat malaria. Okay, I can look it up, the name of that plant, and I can go to one of the glasshouses at Kew and happen to have that plant growing. And I can test it. I'm working with collaborators who are really have kind of the tools to study malaria. I can provide them with tinctures, extracts of that plant, no activity. Now, does that mean that that plant hasn't got activity? It might be that the plant at Kew doesn't have that activity because it's not exposed to the climatic, the soil conditions, etc. So you mustn't dismiss it. The next thing that is a challenge is the fact that if it's a folklore, have you really got on top of the folklore? And something that I find more and more is come to the light. It's not just one plant. It's sometimes more than one plant, but they'll only tell you about one plant, so you're not getting the whole picture. But it's that combination. And I think, parts of traditional Chinese medicine and others, where they've really kind of investigated that a lot, which has similarities to modern medicine, because the doctor very rarely gives you one pill. He'll give you a few, sometimes to counteract the effect of a strong drug. Well, plants are kind of doing the same when you put them in combination. Really fascinating.
Absolutely. And that idea of that kind of don't knock it because you don't understand it. It's like look at it and look again and question. Sometimes I think that we forget that the plants don't create their chemistry for us to use. They create their chemistry for themselves and in response to their surroundings. So absolutely, depending on where where that plant has been raised, its chemistry might be very different. Yeah, absolutely. How do you see, I'm really interested with the traveling you've done, how you see plant medicine being used differently around the world. So in the West, we have choices that people maybe don't have in other places. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So, if you're in parts of, say, well, Africa, South Africa, etc., where a traditional healer will be the first line of call, and it's the same in parts of Asia and South America. And you have got people that have knowledge, but they don't express it in what we take medical terms, etc. They describe it in different ways. And I think one of the challenges at times when you hear about these different uses is if you've had a training, say a westernized training, how do you convert that training to interpreting what they're actually telling you? That does take, I think, a lot of time, patience, etc. Having an open mind, I think, really, really is important. And one of the challenges I think we really face if we're interested in doing this is actually getting funding to do the work. The common thing that I find is, of course, if plants were going to provide you with anything else, we would already known it. That is a very foolish statement to make. Plants, as you've just indicated, Pamela, I mean, they're there to protect themselves by the chemistry and ingredients. We need to see a little bit more about why does a plant have those ingredients? How does it help it survive? By then learning that, we can often transfer that knowledge with respect to our uses of plants.
And do you feel like the knowledge around plants is being lost in any ways in some of the places that you've been studying?
We are losing a lot of information. So, one of the projects we had at Kew was Remembered Remedies, which was to look at the use of plants within the UK prior to the National Health Service in 1948, because that we are losing that generation. And of course, the National Health Service also coincided with the development of penicillin and a range of kind of westernized drugs that took place.
Mm-hmm.
And people, therefore, are not always turning to their plants. And of course, you had a change in the population, less people being kind of living in the rural area, more in urban. And that connection with plants has been lost. So within the UK, we at least have some traditional knowledge, especially in older kind of communities or different parts of England. You then go to, say, parts of Africa or South America where you have no traditional, let's say, written traditional knowledge. You compare that with parts of Asia and China, where they have over 2,000 years of written evidence. And again, people as, in parts of China can go back and record, how did they come to use those plants? We don't have any of that background information, say, in parts of Africa. So we really do need to be, documenting it, which gets it into another kind of situation. So, as an academic, I can document, I can work with traditional healers or with a community, kind of documenting how they use their plants. But I really must have nowadays permission to be able to do that. And somebody needs to be keeping an eye on who else is then going to use that information. Is it going to go into a pharmaceutical company to produce a drug? And how, therefore, does that traditional healer who's kept that knowledge alive, how in a way do they benefit? Very, very kind of ethical questions that underpin this type of work.
Absolutely. And I would imagine that going into a community as well, there may well be a little bit of suspicion around, and maybe reticence to share, which is also where, in one hand, it's protecting the tradition within the community. In the other hand, if you're not sharing all of the knowledge, and that's when we get half-baked ideas about what plants can do. Would you say that's right?
Oh, very much so. And yeah, you'll sometimes get spun along with a story as you're going in, especially if it's kind of a white face amongst other communities going in, and they think, oh, how's that information going to be used? So you can be given very interesting stories about the use of the plants that bear no resemblance to how they're using. What we've often found in, because we've gone into, say, South Africa, and been working with a UK charity, Garden Africa, where they had a problem with the supply of medicinal plants, which is unfortunately a common problem, especially quality plant. And we went in to help them get good quality plants being propagated, etc. They didn't give us any information about the uses of the plants right in the beginning because that was so sensitive. They just gave us an indication of the plants. It was only towards the end that we got into how these plants are being used because we needed to make sure that we were not propagating inactive plants. I think that is a mistake that has often been made. And when you're therefore propagating material for a community that is going to use those, because these are the traditional healers that really source of medicine for a lot of people. We could have ended up growing inactive plants that they would have used. And that raises quite a few other kind of challenges, but I mean, how do you share some of that information? How do you really evaluate that those plants are active? And that needs good communication and trust. But really is
Absolutely.
very, very important.
Which can't be built overnight. And just to kind of bring that back, in communities like ones that I've worked in rural Uganda, for example, where there is no alternative pharmaceutical medicine available, if the healers don't have access to land where the plants are being grown, or if you come along and you're propagating, like you said, inactive plants, that's a disaster. That can be a village wiped out because they are using medicine, they're using plants, but the plants don't have the active constituents that they require, or they can't get a hold of them.
And with changes in land use, that is an increasing problem in some parts of the world. So, some deprived communities become even more deprived because of these pressures on land use, etc.
I feel like we have lost our connection very much in the UK, particularly, I think, I feel, to our land and our plants, and so many people know nothing about them. But we are lucky enough not to be 100% reliant on them for our healthcare. Whereas that's a whole different ball game. If you are 100% reliant on them, that's a much more serious matter.
We have the ability to choose. That's not the case in, you
No.
could say, I would have thought about, 80% of the world don't have that privilege.
Yes, and as a young as a newly fledged herbalist, I was very sniffy about pharmaceutical medicine until I went out and worked in rural East Africa and discovered what life is like when you don't have the ability to choose. And I soon sobered up around that idea for sure, for sure. Monique, some brilliant insights there. We really would like to continue this conversation, of course. So please stay with us, and we'll be right back after this commercial break.
The station that makes you feel good.
Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plants dialogue hosted by Sophie.Health. At Sophie, we bring together experts and voices who rarely cross paths. Our quest is to illuminate the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age. Join us to explore new boundaries of digital personalized medicine with deep roots in the natural world and hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.Health, reconnecting people and plants.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
If optimising your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active. Available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well Pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back, everyone. A quick reminder before we dive back into the conversation to visit our special landing page for UK HR listeners at join.sophie.health/radio for all the information you need to join us and your special 50% discount code radio50. Now, before the break, we heard Professor Monique Simmons talk about how her journey with plants actually started with the way insects interacted with plants, and that led to some research around folklore about plants that aren't really used anymore, especially plants outside of the UK. Outside of the UK, it seems especially in Africa and Asia and whatnot, there are much stronger links between plants and their unique uses, right? And Monique started to look for, evidence associated with this folklore, doing research on their medicinal use, how and what part of the plant is used, when it's used, all of those kind of things, and then apply these this knowledge to laboratory settings where you can check the chemistry and see what works and find evidence for that. And we have increased our knowledge and value of the different plants immensely, even on how combinations of plants work, similar to how combinations of medicines are being used in modern medicine. But we are losing a lot of the folklore about plants, about the use of plants. If you think about China, there's like a 1,000+ years of knowledge and written knowledge on how plants have been used versus the passing on of information orally in different cultures. So there are some concerns there for sure. As I just mentioned, Monique, we kind of touched on the ideas of the purity of plants and herbs being incredibly important, and that's a real, crucial piece of work being carried out at Kew, right? And that's also how we got to know you, right? It's because of all the batches of plants that we used at SOFI are tested at Kew for that quality. Can you talk us through the importance of that and how that works at Kew?
Okay, so we're losing kind of partly the information about the use of the plants. But in a way, because a lot of people don't have that interaction that previous generations possibly had with plants, the ability to identify a plant has decreased. I mean, it'd be very interesting to know how many of your listeners have any form of botanical knowledge. Even at universities, teaching taxonomy and systematics, the ability to identify plants has decreased, whereas the interest in, medicinal plants in a way is increasing. That can result in an anomaly because incorrect species can get into the pipeline. So you've got, maybe it's the wrong bit of the plant that's been used or supplied, or it's an inactive one. We've already kind of dealt with that. But the other worry is that it could be the wrong species. And in some cases, it's difficult to differentiate. I mean, if you've got peony, roots of peony, they vary greatly in their medicinal properties. But, unless you're really well trained, how do you know which one you've got? How do you know it's prepared correctly? And so we're very interested in looking at the quality of the material that is being used. So if it is being used for a particular formulation, does it have, first I should say, is it right species? And then does it have what it should have for that proposed use? And I could give you many examples where, unfortunately, the material that is being sold or supplied to other companies is not of the quality it should be. And that is a concern which we need to get on top of.
Yeah, I believe we had some of that with SOFI as well, right? But the very first valerium that we supplied to you guys, that it wasn't actually active at all or something like that?
It didn't have the chemistry that you would be expecting for it to be able to have any properties, say, on anxiety or anything like that, yes.
Yeah.
But, and I remember Cavi mentioning last week when he popped into the program, it was, I think, the first three batches of ashwagandha that we worked with were sent back until we actually found one that we went ahead with. So we really have at SOFI, we've really lived this and understood also the financial impact that has too on a company.
Yeah. And you don't know where along the line something might have happened, depending on whether you're supplied with the raw material or you're actually supplied with an extract. And when somebody is supplied with an extract, that is where there are many ways somebody along the line could be a little bit dubious, with what's happening. So that's why we often check. So if we get a customer that comes back and says, or sends a sample and we say it's not right, it's not good quality, we'll often ask to go, can we actually see the raw material that was used to make that extract? Because it could be the extraction method is not optimizing for the active ingredients. Otherwise, it could be that it's a mixed batch of material, wrong roots instead of aerial parts, things could go wrong. And we need to be on top of that because, clients will be expecting to have good quality material being used.
And is there an organization currently that is potentially, I don't know, in being formed or something where these quality controls take place? I mean, we obviously actively go to Q and say, hey, please check our ingredients. But I'm guessing, I don't know, if you go to Holland and Barrett, all of those products that are being made there, how do you as a consumer know they've actually been checked, whether they actually have active compounds in them?
Yes, I mean, there is legislation in place for some things, especially if you're going to make a claim where you'll have to have that extra level. And of course, there are the pharmacopeias that have, you can be very much involved in developing the pharmacopeias. That will give you an indication of possibly the right species, but they don't go into the quality, i.e. what are the active ingredients. But at least it's one way along the line.
And I just, for the listeners who may not be familiar with the word pharmacopoeia, so as a herbalist, I'm very much familiar with it. And of course, you are involved in writing them. Can you just explain what that means?
Well, the pharmacopoeia is kind of it's like a monograph. It's a specific paper on a species that provides you with information about the anatomy, the shape of the plants or the, maybe it's a whole herb or the flowers. So where you can physically help identify it. And then it gives you some information about the chemistry. And it also provides you with kind of the standards that you need to be looking for using very simple methods to indicate it's the right species. It doesn't go that step further and indicate if you're going to be using it for a particular ailment, what it should contain in it. It's a very, very useful kind of document. And most suppliers of herbs, especially if they're going to be supplying them to herbalists and others, will often use that information.
And it's worthwhile mentioning, I think, that so I work with the British Herbal Pharmacopoeia a lot, for example. These references on plants are the standard and they go back a very long way, and that each country would have had their own version of them. So for a plant to be included in that, so that you knew what you were looking for, what you could use it for, and what the constituents are you looking for. Great, thank you. And you spoke to us when we all visited you, when the Sophie team visited you at Kew, and you very kindly had us to visit there. You gave this great example of a sandalwood product that really showed, this testing, showed up why it was so important. Can you talk us through that?
So in this particular kind of, let's term it kind of a little project we did, we found out information about the main kind of suppliers to the trade in UK that were supplying sandalwood. So it could be that they were getting material from, a country, let's say India, and then they were passing it on. But they were the main suppliers within the UK, and it was over 20 of them. And we asked them to send us a sample of the sandalwood that they had. Or if we couldn't get it directly from them, we found, a way to be able to get it. And we did the analysis and we used the kind of the pharmacopoeia, the standard, European standard, for sandalolds, which are the chemicals in sandalwood that are associated with, you could say, its quality. And they're supposed to be at a certain level. So we tested these samples for the level of these compounds. And not one of those samples contained them at a level that would meet the standard from the European pharmacopoeia. Now, that's a worry in itself. And we could do a little bit of backtracking what was going on here. And it could be because sandalwood is very expensive.
And endangered, isn't it? It's an endangered plant.
It's endangered species.
Yeah.
And you could say that the traditional sandalwood would have come from parts of India. Mm-hmm. But there are other species of sandalwood that can be good quality now being grown in other areas. But what can happen is you could get a tree that was quite young. So the material, say, could have been from branches from young trees where they really haven't matured to be able to produce the essential oils, the key element here. Or it could be adulterated, or they've reduced the levels because it's been diluted in some way. So we could just go back and say, you know, you really, we went back to each of the companies and said, you really need to improve the quality, because, you know, people are being supplied to with that sandalwood. Now, if it's a supply for using in, you know, some joss sticks or something like that, maybe that doesn't matter. But if you're going to use it as a herbalist, then that could be, well, you know, it could be a problem if it's adulterated, or it's just not going to have the value. So people will say, oh, those plants don't work. But one of those samples that we looked at had never seen a sandalwood in its life. It was sandalore, which is synthetic. Now, nothing wrong in that for a candle or possibly a joss stick, but not to be supplied to a herbalist.
No, absolutely,
you know, it's
not.
It's knowing where some of the issues are, like endangered species, that actually as users, we don't put too much pressure, because people are responding to the market needs and they want to have an extract. Therefore, does it really matter? Who's going to find out? And we're seeing an increase in some of these issues, especially when the suppliers are using the internet for sales. Because if, as soon as they're caught, they can you know, move on, etc. Very, very difficult to chase them. And they can totally undermine the use of traditional herbal remedies. And so we need to be on top of that. And this is where other work at Kew can really come into play, because we keep an eye on, say, the threatened status of species, what is being overused, how easy for those plants to be supplied. And, you know, we need to be thinking about this when we're, you know, kind of turning to herbal remedies. Have we got a sustainable source of that material? And is it well documented? And also, if something happens, as is happening with crops, etc., in an area, have we got an alternative source? Mm-hmm. So those suppliers have got more than one source of the material. That really is important for the sustainability of herbs that are used.
And also something that we spoke to, we had Rosemary Gladstar, who's a well-known US herbalist, who was also the founder of United Plant Savers in the US, on the show quite a while back now. And she was talking about the fact that when you are taking plants from a community where that is their only source of income, you know, at the same time, if you're not paying properly and paying proper attention to their conditions, which is something we're very interested in at Sophie, yeah. Paying attention to the conditions in which they work, if they're not enabled to live properly and paid a fair price, they are not going to be good stewards of the land, because yeah. they will not have the capacity to be able to bring that to their work. They will just be, you know, desperately trying to make a living.
Yes, you need to really look through the whole chain from the, you know, putting the seed in the ground, is it the right species, etc. How are those people who are looking after and culturing those plants? How are they benefiting from the, you know, from the end supplier who's going to be using that material?
Yeah,
you really do need to be looking at the, you know, the different elements. So by understanding this more and looking for trends where problems occur, I think that can give the public some reassurance that the material will be good quality, but they need to pay for it. That is a big thing. So if they see something being sold cheaply, that doesn't mean they're getting a bargain.
No. And especially when we look down the road at all the concerns people have about the environment and, about being able to source these plants for a good long time into the future, we need to pay for them now. So we do have a huge amount of power with where we spend our money. But also, I think it's really important to be aware of looking at, not a bargain price for some sandalwood oil, for example, but actually holistically at the entire chain. It's really, really important. And just understanding, I was so shocked when you showed us that slide when we were at Kew. I said, not a single one of these. And I saw, those of you who are not able to see us, Evie kind of sat back when you said none of the 20 samples of sandalwood reached the standard. That's exactly what I did when we visited your offices at Kew. I was, and one of them was synthetic. It's unbelievable that, they were the top 20, providers of this to the market, and none of them made the standard. Really, we need to be doing everything we can to be doing a better job. Monique, thank you so much. That's been a fascinating conversation. As always, time is too short, and we need to move on now, but we would love you to stay with us for the rest of the show. If you want to learn more about Monique's work, we highly recommend getting hold of her excellent book, The Gardener's Companion to Medicinal Plants, for an introduction to the uses of plants. And of course, whenever you can be in London, do make sure to visit and support the Royal Botanic Gardens Kew, and their incredible work. So please stay with us for the rest of the show, where we'll be meeting my Herbal Hero of the Week. We'll have thoughts from Evie on our discussion today, and we'll have some final thoughts from Vincent, and all of that will be coming up right after this commercial break.
The station that makes you feel good.
Stop suffering with pet-related allergies when near dogs and cats. Great news, you can feel safe around pets with Nasal Guard for pet lovers. Nasal Guard topical gel blocks pet dander, hair, and dust mites from entering your nasal passages. Try Nasal Guard for pet lovers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about Nasal Guard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, ant and deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle Magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle Magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plant dialogue hosted by Sophie.Health on UK Health Radio. And now it's time for our Herbal Hero of the Week. It was quite difficult to choose the last Herbal Hero for the series. We've looked at herbs that we've worked with so far in Sophie, all to do with sleep and anxiety. We've looked at herbs that are probably lurking on your kitchen windowsill or in your kitchen cupboards. And at one point, we even broke the mold and spoke about medicinal mushrooms and trees. The last few weeks, we started thinking about some of the plants you can see emerging from their winter sleep. And today, I'm going to talk about one of those, but also because it's the perfect example of nature providing what we need at exactly the right time. So as I've mentioned before, I talk a lot about living seasonally, and you can follow me at Pamela Spence Herbalist on Instagram or Facebook for more of that content. But this plant is an extremely important one for me, both as a harbinger of spring and then autumn, but also as a medicine for my dispensary. And I'm talking about elder. So very soon we're going to see those frothy, creamy white flowers. We used to see them, seeing those in products now, like elderflower cordial or presse, or you know, there's lots of recipes online to make your own elderflower champagne, which I highly recommend. And they've become quite the thing in high-end restaurants in a sort of a tempura batter as well. But what you may not know is that elderflower is probably the most important herbal medicine for hay fever. And it's wonderful for really drying up a drippy nose and unblocking the sinuses. And the real beauty of elderflower is that it arrives right when hay fever season begins to really take off in the spring. So because of its actions of this sort of this dryness, it's also very useful at the onset of a cough or a cold. The cordial is not going to help you much, but a tincture or a strong herbal tea definitely can. And I always make sure that I've got some dried elderflowers around for myself in the springtime. But that's not all it has to offer. So in the autumn, those flowers, so you mustn't pick them all. You mustn't pick them all anyway, because you must always leave enough for nature. But make sure you leave enough to turn into berries, which you can, these luscious dark purpley berries that are packed with vitamin C and an antiviral component, and we can pick in the autumn, which means they make a really great remedy for seasonal coughs and colds. And of course, as the weather turns colder in the autumn, that's exactly when we need to get our hands on this medicine. So there's a component in elderberries that makes some people really nauseous, but it is destroyed by heat. So if you are tempted to make anything and you're looking up recipes online or in books, please make sure that you heat your elderberries, whatever it is that you're going to do. One of the reasons I think that it's traditionally taken as a syrup is because you have to cook them. Some people will be unaffected by this compound. For other people, it really affects them quite badly. So just don't take the risk. Always heat them. Look for a syrup recipe where you're cooking. And I always post my own recipe on my social media channels when it comes to that time of the year. So you can follow me there for them. I don't think there's any better way to connect people and plants, really, than to watch them herald in the seasons. We were just talking earlier in the conversation with Monique about us losing that connection to the plants around us. So I think it's really important to watch the seasons roll around, and the plants are showing us what season is coming in. And as I said, elder is one of my very favourites because it provides exactly what we need at the right time. So that's elder for you. Now, time for Pioneer Reflections with Evie. I'd love to hear what you've been thinking about our conversation today with Monique.
Yeah, for sure. So my kind of main thoughts around what we were talking about is the kind of importance around the subject of how different cultures' knowledge are not always like kind of told or may even become forgotten. I think it's so important to try and get everyone to reconnect themselves with the medicine that can be found literally all around us at all times, and the importance of recognizing this so that the plants don't get ignored, but then conversely respecting the traditional work of the healers that then found them. I was so glad to hear you say this, because I've often felt that traditional plant medicine has kind of been stolen from the original kind of founders. Even though from this info many important drugs have been developed, there isn't enough cultural kind of awareness spread about the community that have founded the chemical compounds, and then, you know, we have kind of over harvested them, that their only source of medicinal uses have been taken away kind of to use in Western medicine. So I really do believe that there needs to be a balance in both of these things, where yes, we need the medicine and it's great to find it, But we also need to respect where it's come from and, you know, make sure not to overharvest it. And this is actually a conversation I had back with the founder of Sophie Carve, back when he first introduced me, because I'm his daughter, when he first introduced me to Sophie, my first concern is, where are you getting this information? And what are you doing for the cultures that you're kind of like taking this information and like using it? And I really respected that Sophie, he really had a kind of, I don't know, there was just a real thought process behind not just taking one culture idea and kind of running with it. There's a real respect for the plants that we use. And I think that you really brought that up today, Monique, and I can really respect that. So thank you.
Amazing. Monique, anything that brought up for you that you'd like to come back with?
No, I think that was very, very interesting kind of synopsis. I also, because we ended up talking about kind of the negative things that go wrong, I'd like to end with more of the positive.
Mm-hmm.
It's out there. There's a heck of a lot that needs to be discovered, and if people want to have a really fascinating career, I think there's a lot of activity in this space. You know, nature has provided us with lots of remedies. I think we're just scratching the surface. The tools that we have, better understanding of diseases, better analytical techniques in the lab, putting those together. Oh, wish I was say 30 years younger or something like that, starting my career. I think we have the tools to really get a better grasp of what's around us. Plants and well, as well as fungi. And we really haven't mentioned
Yes,
fungi. I
we
think
have.
that is really exciting.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
What would be your if for somebody who's enthused by what they've heard today, Monique, what would be your ideal pathway through, you know, what would they study? Would they, do you think they would go, is botany working in that direction? Would they, what do
No,
you?
I think if you're doing botany, you'll most likely end up with the genomic side, which has a role here, yes. But I would look for somebody, especially on the medicinal side, who has some knowledge about chemistry and possibly pharmacology, that side that can get in that route. But have a spread of science projects to the A level stage. Because you'll find that that knowledge will come in very handy as you go through.
Yeah, that's great.
And
Thank you. I think that I think that there are some career pathways being forged at the moment. We know that Evie's been talking about them through the series and the things that she would like to do. There are some career paths being forged that I think probably don't even have names yet. And especially in the area of fungi, like you said, and that's a whole world that we barely know anything about, which is quite incredible, especially at the moment reading the things about the fungi able to, you know, get rid of plastic and all those kind of things. It's quite incredible. Thank you so much. Vincent, any final thoughts before we
I just
go
for
for
me,
today?
it was just a little thought, a question to Monique, really. We were talking earlier about sort of like, you know, Chinese folklore, which is very extensively documented. And I was kind of, you know, wondering how we in the UK slash Europe are doing in that, right? So, you know, how well is our folklore documented? And is this something that is, you know, still an ongoing process? Maybe something that Q is even involved in terms of documenting the different folklore from all the different countries, or maybe a different organization. But I was just wondering if you compare kind of like, you know, 1,000 years of, you know, written documentation, you know, versus, yeah, what we have here in wider Europe. I was wondering, yeah, Monique, what your thoughts are on that and how far we are.
Yeah, we do to help document the uses of plants from different parts of the world, especially with partners in country. So some of that information stays within country, and then they decide to put it in the public domain. I think that really that's very, very important. You know, where to go next? I think with parts of Europe, especially say plants and fungi, you can take them to the pharmacist and they'll help you identify them. Are you going to take them into, you know, a pharmacist within UK? They don't have that training.
No.
And I think we need to get some of the training with our doctors as well. Because plants, say, if it's really good quality, they will work. But remember, they have been selected by people using them without having westernized drugs. And then you can get an active plant with a westernized drug, and they can interact, unfortunately, sometimes negatively. And it's the plant, the one that usually suffers, which gets the no, cannot use, etc., not the drug. But having more knowledge about that area, I think, is important.
Thank you.
Yeah, really, really important. And I feel like, as well, when I look at the herbals being written now and the way we speak about plants now in the West, if you look back to, so I've now moved my whole library in here, and I've got, for example, the United States dispensatory going, you know, 100 years back on my shelves. If you look at that and you look at the depth to which they know their plants, because they didn't have anything else, they know the plant so deeply. They write pages and pages and pages about one single plant. Whereas now, when you look at a herbal, you get a line, you get the headline. We've really lost that depth of knowledge because we're no longer so dependent. And I think that we lose that at our peril, really, because we don't really understand them in the same way that we used to understand them. So thank you, everybody, for a really interesting discussion today. Thank you so much, Monique, for being here. And that's it for this series. So thank you so much for being with us over the last 21 episodes as we've delved into the world of wellness from many different angles in our quest to reconnect people and plants. It's been our absolute pleasure to have you with us on the journey. We've had some incredible guests, from Professor Jonathan Sacchi, our pioneer of keyhole surgery, to Professor David Cassere, Professor of Palliative Care at Duke University, from Mo Wild, who lived in wild food for a year, to Amanda Edmiston, herbal storyteller, from founder of United Plant Savers, Rosemary Gladstar, to Simon Alexander Ong, author of Energize and the winner of the 2023 Business Book of the Year, and so many more besides, not to mention today's guest, Professor Monique Simmons of Royal Botanic Gardens Kew. Just before we go then, a reminder of the special portal we've created for UK Health Radio listeners to join Sophie at join.sophie.health/radio, where you'll find all the information you need about our products and a discount code Radio50, especially for you to use. And please, if you haven't yet, make sure to follow us on Instagram at sophie.health to keep up to date with the team. So finally, a huge thanks to my co-hosts Evie and Vincent and Cave when he's here. And of course to Johan, founder of UK Health Radio, who has patiently driven the show every week for us. Thank you for having us on your station, Johan. And we look forward to next time. And until then, take care, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
But I can't breathe.